All right. Well, thank you for coming, and I think this is really has been a pleasure to organize this session with Johannes, Daisuke, and Emilia. Following Hiroshi's talk points yesterday, so I'll talk in my give a little bit of. He was talking about cause of fibrillation and cause of cure to fibrillation. So I'll try to do a little bit of just possible mechanisms for one initiation of fibrillation and one mechanism possible for the fibrillation. So we're looking at so I want to just first start a little bit with MINDS, with following what Leon Glass said, because I think it's a very nice experiment. So we have with a grad student and another grad, we have been playing a little bit with fire, playing with MINDS experiments, trying to reproduce them, but with fire. So the nice thing about this idea is he can produce anatomical reentry. So in the lab, one of the experiments by the end, we got a hammer, and then you just put it in liquid nitrogen, just put it in there, so this is the head of the hammer, kill the tissue, and then you can initiate very happy, nice re-entry there. So you can show how the nice re-entry of anatomic, and then you can do a simulation on that. So
this way.
It's a dog ventricle.
Okay.
Just the right ventricle, and then you freeze the
endocardium.
Oh, dog.
Dog. And
what's the center? Was hit by a hammer? Sorry.
Oh, frozen with liquid nitrogen.
Oh,
so
I
then
see.
You just put it there. So then it killed the tissue. So now when you initiate a wave, then you just begin re-entry there. So the nice thing is that there's a lot of dynamics that we have to understand from re-entry and one way. So
otherwise it would fibrillate, right?
It would fibrillate, yeah. The, for these sites, we fibrillate. Sometimes we can, you see the high technology we use for.
So you
can pinch this is to close all the vessels.
It's perfused?
It's perfused from here. From the it's perfused, so you can see that it's just not. You can see the excitability by measure the velocity, conduction velocity, and see that is.
Is there an coupler there? So it doesn't coupler.
Yeah, this is there's plenty. Yeah. Although today and earlier on also, Jan will play. We'll talk about methods to uncouple. So we're playing to fire, so we can actually get just a flame retardant canvas and some. Aluminum foils to make tracks and oil, viscous oil, and that's just an idea of Connor with one of his undergrads, so we were working on that. So we did a one-dimensional ring, so here we can actually have one-dimensional rings, and we can, well, so one-dimensional cables and one-dimensional rings, right? A square is the approximation of the ring. So we have a wick here. And the nice thing is that if you put too much oil, then everything burns, right? But if you put oil that is very viscous, it takes time for it to absorb the canvas, so then you can make it excitable. So you have all these things. So the nice thing is you can really show a lot of the dynamics that we see on the heart, even though not all of the mechanisms come from the same, of course, it's not the same, but the analogy is very powerful. So here's just above threshold, if you use too little flame, it will not burn. If you put enough flame, it will burn, right? So you can start a flame. You can the propagation in both directions, so you fire at the beginning and you'll have two flames then propagating, and you have a refractory period now behind, so after flames you cannot start again, so you have a refractory period. So you have the two ways propagating. You can do unidirectional block, so you can start the fire and then block the back of the wave until everything cancels, until the fire is extinguished, and then you can produce just one wave in one direction.
It's slower.
Oh, this is everything. So this is speed up four times. So it's actually very slow. The flame propagates very, very slow. Now we can see the effect of sort of boundary conditions when it has the zero flux. So then it arrives to the boundary and it has to annihilate. So it has to die out the flame. Dies out. You can have collision of waves now, so you have two waves propagating. When they collide, then they cannot cross each other because they have the refractory period, so then they annihilate and die.
Like forest fires. But
yeah, but now in the lab, right? Hopefully without spreading to outside the lab. Then you can have also, depending on how much oil you put on, it can be some homogeneities on the cable as well. So you can actually have APDs that get longer or shorter, depending here. There's a small wave and it propagates there. There's a little bit more fluid. So then the APD becomes larger. So you can have different lengths of away lengths.
So can you see actually back propagating?
Yeah, we have everything. He's right. Of course, not the same mechanism, but it still is that. Yeah. So before that, this when you have this coordinate, when you have these wavelengths that can alternate, you have this coordinate alternance. One very strong effect of this coordinate alternance is when you propagate, you have the wave front, and then it collapses, and you have the wave back just collapsing down. Right. That's very hard to see. Numerically, you can see it experimentally, because the wavelengths are very large compared to the tissue. It's very hard to see this collapsing of the wave. Numerically, you can see it very often. So this is a ring simulation. So this is passed here, comes back here. So now you see when there's this coordinate alternance, there's the way. There's a one front, and there can be three way backs. Right? The nice thing, this came actually from a paper with Leon Glass that we did actually at the end of last meeting that we had here. So from the last meeting, we got that little paper.
It's the Miller-Reuter simulation, right?
It's Miller-Reuter. Yeah, you know your models. So the same thing with the flame, it gets a long part, and it leaves around the little wave behind, and it collapses. So it's much easier to visualize it with the flame. Why it will do that, and it will extinguish. If the you have the prolongation of the action potential, and then that actually can produce EADs. So here you see it's prolongated here. You see from here there's going to be an EAD, an EAD coming out. Delay after the polarization. And I have a movie with one producing like three or four, but I didn't have time to finish it last night to speed it up, because otherwise it's very slow. But you see that phase-to re-entry if you were doing it in a ring. Now in a ring, of course, now you can also have the 1D re-entry, right? So now you have here. So we have done it go at least about three times. We're trying to do is see if we can make it work more, change it with the work with the oil. But at least we have done it that goes around a couple of times, two, three times.
Paroxysm of
the... Yeah, you see sometimes it gets longer and short, right? There's also a little elongation. And sometimes it accelerates, sometimes it accelerates. So it's all this. Anyway, all right? And then the last thing I have is a conduction block, right? It propagates and it finds a region that is not excitable and just dies out, right? So which is one of the main mechanisms that we think for initiation of spiral waves or arrhythmias is that, right? So that's what we're going to talk about, the initiation by conduction block. But before, we were talking about yesterday the arrhythmia, why arrhythmias are so complicated in the atria. So this is a dog ventricle. This is the right ventricle. This is the right atria. This is the SA node is somewhere around here, and this is the appendix. So you can have ectopic beats that drive the activation. So every now and then you can have fast ectopic beats. So an arrhythmia could be produced by ectopic beats, or it can be produced by one spiral wave, but also can be produced by two spiral waves or multiple spiral waves that are breaking. So it's the same tissue. So it just depending on initial conditions or health, you can initiate all of them. So what kind of arrhythmia will happen at some point, maybe independent of what happened at another time. So you can sustain all the different.
And the protocol is the same? Just fast pacing.
Mm-hmm. Except for this one, the first one, the autonomic pacing at some point was just starting when we were handling the tissue. All right, so why are these arrhythmias so complex? Structure. So my old advisor, Steve Evans, he was the chief of cardiology in Israel, he used to say, for atrial fibrillation, structure is destiny. So it's true, when you see the structure of the atria, it's very different between different arrhythmias. I mean, it has an overall structure. But inside, it's very, very thin, but it has all these pectinate muscles. And you can see how complicated the propagation of waves can be across these pectinate muscles. These pectinate muscles sometimes are attached and sometimes they're not. So they can be actually like bridges, and sometimes they're attached to the surface. So it becomes really, really complicated how you are. So you can see more. And it's all over the, especially the atria is very, very pectinate. Anyway, so in respect of conduction block and initiation of arrhythmias, so we always talk about initiation of arrhythmias by maybe alternans in the APD. So when you're pacing too fast, almost all mammalian hearts, except pigs we have not been able to, if they are healthy, they don't alternate. You can pace really fast until conduction block or incision fibrillation. They don't alternate. Any other mammalian heart we have tried, they interpacing with the alternates. And as you start pacing fast, it develops this periodontal, the long, short, long, short, long, short. And so this experiment I did with Alessio in Cornell. And we pace a little too faster, you can develop 2-2-2, and then the 2-2-2 becomes tachycardia and the fibrillation. And that's what happens when he eats the hamburgers.
What anymore?
This is dog.
It's not an issue.
Humanius, Italianus, Humanius. So indeed, APD alternans can produce very complex APD dispersion when you do it in space. As you start developing the alternans, you can form at one edge. So this is a right ventricle to a dog. You pace here, and you start forming. There's no alternans here, but then one region starts forming alternans between beat to beat. So first you form alternans at one point. Then eventually, as you increase the cycle length, now there's beat to beat variation in the whole tissue. So it gets long action potential, then a short action potential. You can measure the difference between APDs between the two along the tissue, along a line, or you can do it in whole tissue as well. But you develop from a little bit alternans then to concordant and then to discordant. You can have one node here. Or you pace much faster, you can have many nodes. So in this case, along this line here, you can have three nodes.
Is this a septum, or do the nodes align with anatomical?
No, actually, the fibers go along this way.
I see.
You see the propagation here. We pace from here and it's propagated. So it's accelerating. Is that no? The fibers are this way, right? This is slow down here.
It's stationary, the nodes.
That's the thing. Exactly. That's the main point. All the nodes are stationary. Once the patterns form,
yeah. This
is the thing. Exactly. You get my first. So all the patterns, they can vary with initial conditions, but always once they form, they're stable. They're very stable, and you can form them. And depending on what is very interesting is that depending on initial conditions, just a small variations in initial conditions can give you different patterns. So this is the same preparation. A lot of different stimulus. So what we did is we stimulate for a certain amount of time T, then we break for a certain amount of T, and we start again. So it was continuously the same rest time, the same initiation time, the same rest, and between experiment and experiment, it changed. It can go all concordant, almost all concordant, or it can have nodal lines here. Can be very different nodal lines. Also, epicardium and endocardium were different. I don't have time to talk about it, but there's now surface of nodal lines. So not nodal lines, but in 3D you have surface lines. No surface lines, surface.
Nodal surface,
thank you, yes.
And it's the same heart, right?
This is the same heart, this is different heart. Yeah, this is a different heart. We did it for...
The pacing side is the same, right, for all of
them? The same pacing side, the same one for all of them, and the same protocol, right? So this is just the same. We just repeated the protocol many times, in and out, with the same resting, the same time of activation. So it was very, very... but the funny thing is that it produced a lot of dispersion. The dispersion is huge and very complicated, but it's stable. It's stable. It doesn't go into fibrillation. It stays there. Very
how
happy.
Big is the dispersion? I mean, the APD difference.
It can be 40 milliseconds, something like that. It's very large, the dispersion. And what we notice actually, we're having this in the paper we published, the dispersion doesn't change between when you start pacing a really large cycle length, you have a non-trivial dispersion in the tissue, and as you start pacing faster and faster, that dispersion doesn't change. But what happens is that as you start getting to more discordant alternans, how far the dispersion is gets closer. So the difference between 40 milliseconds is basically side to side. So one side we have a long APD and the other one a shorter APD. But once you start having the alternans, then the dispersion is the same, but it's mostly just localized close to the nodal lines. So what happens is that dispersion gets localized closer, and that's one of the things that becomes more arrhythmic.
How fast are you pacing here?
These ones were about 150 milliseconds, so really close to conduction block or fibrillation. In the dog, we could go like 130 at some point.
100.
Yeah, or 100. Yeah, that's 100 sometimes. If we have really go slowly, then we can go up to 100.
you measure CV? It's harder because it's very small.
It's harder, but we have some. So in Simonetta's talk, we're going to show some. She'll show some of the conduction velocities and how actually scales. But the important takeoff is that, well, there are two things. One is very regular, the patterns that we can get and depend on initial conditions, but small variations in time initial conditions can generate different patterns. And the other thing is that the patterns are stable. So this is the main thing. So if they are stable, then cannot be probabilistic. I mean, they look really produce a lot of dispersion, but are not initiating an arrhythmia. And they're not only for dog. We have done it also in different species. This is with Ilya and Claire. Ilya will talk a little bit more this afternoon about the method and voltage and calcium for very high resolution on the rabbit. So this is rabbit. This is 146 pacing cycle in 140. This is discordant alternans, very pronounced, even an odd beats. So one thing different to Emil, to your talk, I was looking. The animals that you in your paper, you have very small, 1.5 to 2 kilograms rabbits. So they are very small. They are like 2 weeks old. We use 7 to 8 weeks. So these ones we use adult rabbits. So they're more like. So that's probably you get spiral waves in a tiny little small heart, and you only get alternates at about 140, 130, right? We start getting alternates. We show it, but 220 we already have alternates. Calcium you start earlier. Voltage visualable, you can start at 200, and 130 is the we can arrange before getting fibrillation too. But this is different animals, so different animals, different patterns. Same animal, different run. This is a different animal, different patterns too.
What does the color mean?
So it's even and also here is the APD from 56 to 73, from 57 to 79 is the colors. So each one as you pace it changes a little bit the APD different distribution. So it's the difference in APD, and the white means the is the normal lines.
PI is
a pacing cycle integral. So at 140.
140 milliseconds.
Mm-hmm. At 140 milliseconds, the APD goes from 56 to 73.
So in the previous slide of the dog, if you can go back, so it's you're saying it's not the proarrhythmic, but if there was a trigger, ectopic beat, it would be proarrhythmic.
Right. If there's an ectopic, it would destroy
itself,
right?
Just by itself,
will not do it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's my next point.
Do you test the effect of pacing in different places?
Yes. So that, this one, oh boy. We did, I don't know. It was
1,300.
It was a thousands of more, because we did the same preparations, 4 different sites, epi and endo, and for all the cycle lengths until we got fibrillation.
And
so that paper is a lot.
The number after the end, is that the sequence at which you stimulated?
No, this is the number of run.
The number of run, because I was trying on the upper one to correlate complexity with hair number, maybe.
No, so we arranged hair on in similarity, so you can see a little bit some similarities arranged like that, so it's easier. But you see that the numbers of when they happened, they were this is 5, 14.
Because with any experimental prep you have run down, it's outside of the body, it's not natural. So metabolically, it changes over time.
Oh yeah, well we test at the beginning and at the end a lot of the and check that we get the same conduction velocity, we have the same.
Do you have a time sequence of how one of those patterns would form mm-hmm. from the beginning?
Everything's here.
Okay. But how does it look like? Is it fragmented and gets coarser, or is it?
It just sort of starts there and then gets coarser. It's not really like a moving line that forms and stays. No, it starts little by little and gets deeper. So the nodal line seems to be already started somewhere.
And then
just get larger.
And these are healthy hearts.
Healthy, out of the body, very healthy. So so in this case, you can run for long. I mean, long time, and you'll get a very stable, steady state dynamics. So it's very complicated dynamics, but still very steady state. So it doesn't change, and even higher orders. So this is a period 2. But we have seen period 4. Many times we get period 4, but it's stable, right? It's period 4, but it's stable. We can get period up to period 8, and in period 8, and still it's very stable. So it can get very, very really complicated, but still stable. Right? So one makes you...
During the alternance?
Of course, right?
Because it was like long, short the patterns.
Right.
So now, how would I map the 4-4?
So it takes 4 times to repeat the pattern. So you have, it's in here, you can see them here. So you have the pattern. So and these sections actually doesn't need to happen the whole time. One section can be 2-2, another small section can be 4-4.
Right,
so not all over the tissue.
If you go back to the previous slides, I think I start to understand what you're talking about. This one. It's, do you understand right that actually it was whole heart experiment?
Mm-hmm.
But here we see only...
Only the surface
picture.
Of one.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get the picture? This picture. How?
So you're pacing. So.
No, I'm talking about picture. Why don't we see the whole part? Is it?
Just one camera.
It's just one camera.
Looking at the side.
This ventricle.
So how do you eliminate atria from the picture?
Oh, we're pacing much faster than the atria. So the atria doesn't get...
Physically erased the pixels.
Use a mask.
Just by hand.
Yeah. We're only concentrating on the... Yeah.
So these four verticals surgically eliminated the atria.
Surgically, I don't know.
Okay, whatever. And then you have this remnants of... verticals, and then that the picture, it's just camera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Now I understand. Thank you.
And then you pace, and then you get even and odd frames, and then you calculate the APD. So this is the duration, or not the propagation.
And in this geometry, you
APD
have
duration.
Stable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So very complicated. So the wave actually didn't shoot, but the wave when you have these waves is very, it accelerates, deaccelerates in certain section, accelerates. In order to get these patterns here, the wave had to accelerate and get long, then stop a lot and go slowly and make a very small one and produce the little humps that I showed you at the beginning of this. So
another question, if you can please elicit my ignorance, these structures, these muscles inside ventricles, they're also called pectin muscles.
Mm-hmm. You also have pectin, but they're less pronounced as in the atria, but they're still there, and they're more in the right than in the left.
And they're much deeper than where he's imaging.
Here just
like it's not the same as his bundle or anything.
They're inside.
No. But the trabecular, the delicate trabecular too, like.
Yes,
it's just the epicardium.
It's just the epicardium.
Some of the structures seem to repeat. So see, for example, when you see the left, right.
In the rabbit tend to repeat a little bit more than in the dog.
Structures there?
No, we didn't see like where it pin where the nodal lines will pin. No, the vessels go like that.
There's no anatomical.
No, there was no. And especially you see it here. I mean, in the dog here there was not really a. And this dog actually here, this is I should put a picture. But here's the dog. This is actually endocardium. So you have the pectinates there. So but you don't see. You only see the propagation through the. All right. So I say so it's stable, right? So we have all this association of APD associated to T wave in large scale and known as a precursor of sonic cardiac death. So then what is causing in the incision of the arrhythmias? Right. So, what produces the conduction block? So our hypothesis is that it's not the action potential duration that is the one that produces conduction block, but it's when you start having action potential amplitude that actually you cannot propagate. And it makes sense. Well, to me, it makes sense in the sense that if the amplitude starts become too small, then so there's not enough sodium and cannot propagate.
In the APA, when you engage the part of the CV where it starts to go down.
Once again, right, and. And we start increasing some of the sodium channels, right? I mean, so especially the recovery, right? So here is this is simulation with a pacing from the cable. So it's just a cable pacing here. Even and odd beats are shown as green and yellow. So you have a long, short. That's and there's no conduction velocity. So it's the same way propagates the same way for both. Once you have a little bit of conduction velocity, then you have this cordon alternate. And now you have the long short, and the short becomes long, and the long becomes short. right? So the same story as always. Long short, you see a little bit of the wave down there. But still, it's a one-to-one, right? It's still happy, nothing happens. You pace a little faster, you start getting a little bit more of the problem with the conduction velocity of the sodiums, and then you start seeing a little bit of amplitude alternance as well. The, not only the duration, but the amplitude starts to change a little bit. You go much faster, now you have pronounced amplitude alternance, and it can be so large that at some point cannot propagate anymore and produces conduction block. And it dies out.
What model is this,
Father? This is the four-variable Purkinje model. Just a few years before, I found this really nice paper from Miles. This is from Godfrey's lab. And they did a very beautiful experiment on rabbits where they show that progression action potential amplitude alternance was followed by the induction of ventricular fibrillation, and importantly, the degree of amplitude alternance was correlated to the inducibility of EF, which was not the case for the magnitude of the FPD alternance. So they have these hearts that they make it heart failure, and then they show that there was actually pronounced alternance amplitude and more initiation to VF once they saw it, not before. So they could have IPD alternance, but no initiation of VF. So it was only when you get that when you do it. So we propose that in addition of the IPD alternance mechanism that produces the IPD, there's also an action potential amplitude alternance that is driven more by the sodium and can be identified in the QRS.
Complex. But on the previous slide, was that a
voltage
sensitive dye?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Why?
Yeah. The B2B difference was just much bigger than I would have.
Yeah. No. When you have this, it can be really, really large, right? And one of the things I'll talk a little bit at the end of this section, what some a reviewer was mentioning, and it's another thing that could be conduction block before the end by ischemia, something that. It's been done before, but I'll mention it's not that.
I remember in the past story, although David Rosenbaum's original paper, they had the T-wave alternance and QRS, alternate. So they had amplitude alternates before the initiation of PT.
Yeah, they have a little bit of the amplitude.
A little bit of the alternates, right.
But everybody keeps focusing just on the APD, the amplitude, not on the amplitude reaction potential. So we decided to try to model this and to understand it better. So Connor, before he had a nice beard, he did help me with experiments, and Diana did all the modeling and the calculations. So we decided to make it simpler, try to get, so we took out very low calcium experiments on rabbit hearts. So basically in that case, you only have basically sodium and potassium. So it's easier to model. So we have a two-model. We create a two-variable model that only has sodium and potassium, and then try to study the amplitude. And we can see it actually in the experiments. We can see this amplitude alternance once you have a very fast pacing in the low calcium. So we create the model. So the model basically it has an H gate for the sodium. So the diastolic interval can be calculated as some function L of the H gate of recovery of the sodium. The APD will be a function of the amplitude, so how high you go is how long, because the potassium is constant, so it just brings you down. So then you can calculate, it's an easy function to calculate the duration as function of the amplitude. And the amplitude will be also a function of H gate. So you have basically these three relationships. So with those ones, you can create a map. So similar as you put a map for the restitution function, APD as a function of H and DI2. Here we can also have an APD, DI, but as function of the, not in time, but also as function of the height and as function of the gate, H, right? So in that case, so when we have the normal APD return map, we have period that is constant, the period is constant, so it's like 45 degrees. The period here, when we use it here, is actually, it's more complicated because it's period function of H. So we have, this is the restitution of actual amplitude as function of H, and this is the period as function of H. So it turns out that as the period gets longer, then intersects much steeper, at a very, very steep angle. And as it goes faster and faster rate, then starts crossing at a much narrower angle. So when you do the linear stability analysis, It turns out that the bifurcation starts when the slope of the AP de restitution over the slope of the PF function is greater than one. So, which because the slope of the period is if it's very steep, then it stabilizes, right? So it's in here. As it starts getting closer and closer and gets less steep, then it starts to stabilize. It starts becoming unstable, and that's what happens. When you start pacing, if you pace here, you get a very little alternance. When you pace here with less steep, then you get more alternance. So you can do that in the model. So we created the model, and this is the map. From the model, we can create a map. And this is the APD of the model. And this is the different curves from the different periods. So period at 300 to 350 to, I cannot read now anymore. Well, it's changing from 300 to 230, I think. But it's changing the period here. And you can see when you're pacing at this value, it's a steady state. Once you pace here, then you get a period doubling in the amplitude. Right? And we can do because these equations are so simple, we can do a first approximation of how di will be a function of the log of the h. APD is a function of APA with an alpha. And APA is a function of beta. So when we put these approximations and put it into the derivative, into our restriction of the slope greater than one, we get a condition that is a function of parameters of the model. So we have this condition is when you have, if this condition is greater than one, you're going to have alternance in amplitude. And the nice thing about these parameters here is that they can be related to physiological parameters. So the excitability of the sodium is related to beta. The magnitude of the potassium current is related to alpha. H star is related with the period. And the H gate, this is the time constant of the H gate. So by playing with the different parameters, you can actually bring a model out or in of the amplitude alternance.
So it's very nice. Adding calcium to the system then sort of means of...
Yeah, because it will affect this alpha, right? So it will stabilize, yeah. It will make it less stronger, right? So it will make it alpha smaller, so it will stabilize. So you have a longer APD, but it will start changing a little bit things, right? Because then it's not so simple. This function will not be that simple. The APD as a function of the amplitude, of the height, right?
It just will provide different means for the excitation and reduce the effect of this APA.
Yeah, this function will be harder to calculate, but will be more constant for a while, and then we'll start changing much later. Mm-hmm. So the nice thing is that then we have three ways to calculate where the bifurcation is for a given system or a model. So if you have a model, we can calculate numerically. We can go by force and period, different periods. So we can find that here at 593, you get alternance, but it disappears. It's just transient. Once you go to 592, then you get alternance in amplitude that is stable, right? If you do, then they feed the model to a map and do the calculation of the map. So here's the slope of the raw function, and when you do that, you get it that is close to it, 588, right? So the map is very close to the model. And if you do it fitting the parameters of the physiological parameters to the model, then you can put the parameters into the equation. And then it turns out that it's also very close, 590. So it's very, very close. So there are three different ways to calculate for this bifurcation, given a model.
Well, tau, 72 milliseconds. Time constant for your H gate.
Yes. But it's still, this is a minimal model, right? So some of these parameters, I'll take them a little bit. The sodium will be extremely, the potassium will be extremely fast too, because there's no calcium, right? So it has to be very steep. But now when you compare to the model, to the experiments, so this is the experiments, normal rabbit, pace it really fast, you get, as long as you don't have APD amplitude, you get stable signal. Once you pace much faster, then you start getting amplitude alternance, long short, and it goes into fibrillation, and when we do it in the model the same way, you get it into fibrillation, once you get the amplitude alternance in the model.
You're using the same model.
Yeah.
So, but the model is for zero dimensional, for an ordinary differential.
This is in space.
No, but the model.
The model, yeah, it's just an ODE.
Just an ODE. And what You didn't show a bifurcation diagram. Do you actually see 4-4 and 8-8
No, model? No, this is the so the bifurcation only goes to 2-2.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have any. We need to be
come back down
or something, okay. which could happen sometimes when you're pacing too fast. Sometimes so there's enough sodium now close to so there's some, when you're pacing fast the tissue, there are a few times that you can actually, the amplitude will start growing again. But I there will be much, I'm not sure if that
will. But no conduction
bar. But no conduction bar.
So we had a paper with Blas in 2007. We had a two variable model that only had the H gate and a constant rate of repolarization. But you can calculate analytically the restitution curve and the bifurcation. And there it's APA by definition because it's a constant rate of repolarization, the triangular shape action potential. So
it's kind of like this one.
So it's the. Almost identical. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Question. So, to me, it makes sense that the constant pacing doesn't really lead to the fibrillation. For example, in EP lab, you just put the catheter in the either atrium or ventricle, and sometimes we have to induce fibrillation just for testing purpose. Mm-hmm. And then just to do the burst pacing of the pacing cycle, that is going to get narrower, and then. You tend to actually go directly from just a 1-1 pacing to 2-1 pacing, and then you just end up not inducing anything. Mm-hmm. So in that kind of situation, what we have to do is just a change in the pacing cycle. So you go from S1, S2, S3, S4, and go down, and then blah, and then you can induce atrial fibrillation. I always thought the mechanism of that change from burst pacing to change in cycle length is that they just create some heterogeneity, spatial heterogeneity in AVD alternates. But did you speculate that the this is what's actually happening in human eyes. It's actually not the APD openness, but the APA openness.
No, everything I'm saying here, I cannot say it will happen in human. I don't know. This is models in the lab, and this is numerical models, so we have to be careful. So I'm just studying this from a mathematical point of view and according to what I see in the lab. So in the lab, when you pace in rabbit and in dog, if you start pacing fast, you get the period doubling and constantly you can keep decreasing. Every now and then you may go to conduction block. Every now and then you may go to fibrillation. More often you go to fibrillation as you keep decreasing. And as you keep decreasing, it doesn't go right away as soon as you change the cycle. You change cycle length and it takes a few beats before it goes into fibrillation. So it's a steady state that is changing dynamically. So that is the point. When you pace it, to get this fibrillation in both in the simulation and here, you start changing the cycle and you develop the alternance and you change it a little, you change the period a little bit lower again, and then it develops and then a little lower, and at some point when you change it, after a few beats, it will produce conduction block. So it takes time to adapt. When you change the cycle length down, it takes time to adapt to the new cycle length when it's alternating, and then it's going to block. So it is possible.
Uh-huh. I think this is nice data because I don't think it was ever shown before that if you really take small chamber cycle lengths, you're going to start to get close to the end of the CV restitution, get the amplitude alternance. Mm-hmm. And the data shows that.
Mm-hmm.
But whether you will see it or not in a human or EP lab depends on how flat is the CV restitution. I think normal excitability, very fast. And so you probably pace, and then you do a few burst pacing. You directly go to the conduction block, without never having visited that, that region, which is extremely narrow. But it could be. I mean, you would have to do an experiment where you really go in small steps, and that would be probably difficult to do. Right?
And all these things just one-dimensional maps. In reality, you have multi. So there's memory and history. So even when we do the experiments, the same rabbit, the same tri protocol. Sometimes we can keep going down along much lower. Sometimes we get fibrillation at side periods that before we could go lower. So in reality, I think it's what more like Alan was mentioning. You have these complex dynamics from the fast pacing, and then you may have an ectopic beat coming from somewhere else. A little deactivation is propagating more in one direction, a little bit different, and then just breaks the symmetry, and then you see it's a breakup.
If I may, I don't know, it might be a more long comment to have at the end, but what I see here is, I didn't see the paper, PRL 2017, but I'm really pleased to see your focus on the front propagation. I believe that this mechanism of action potential amplitude alternance elucidates one of possible mechanisms. There is one more mechanism, and to distinguish between the two, the second mechanism, it's also PRL, I believe it was 2002, and that is dissipation on the front. Here you have, that very nice, the experiment with the flame propagation. So that is a mechanism when the front is eliminated by the back collapsing onto the front. Mm-hmm. And the formula, this interplay between sodium and potassium just gives this condition when front collapses because the back crashes onto it and the whole wave gets out. These alternances. There is second possibility, probably more relevant to bigger animals. And your comment, Amelia, about potassium, about calcium. What calcium does, it actually makes the longer action potential duration, so more time for the front, for the tail to collapse onto the front.
All right, so let me just continue a little bit.
Just in terms of the APA, the monophasic action potential recording in the clinic would pick up action potential?
Depending on the fidelity of the cats there.
Do you see them sometimes?
I just know about the cats there from the literature. So probably my guess is that's going to be worse. But it's not considered to be a gold standard. Because it's so sensitive to the pressure, to the fissure.
So it's just the timing, really. So the amplitude is not reliable. Okay.
So can you clarify the recovery of the sodium channel? It's obviously very different in these two experiments. So how do you go from one to the other?
In the model or in the experiment?
In the experiment.
What?
Experiment
one is a normal heart.
Okay.
Normal and it just pace faster. This one, we take out the calcium. It's low calcium. So low calcium would basically. So in the thyroid we basically have almost no calcium. So then there's no contraction. There's the tissues, you don't need to have levistatin, it doesn't contract. And then the action potential just looks like here in the experiment, right? It just goes up and comes down.
You have an effect on sodium recovery.
Oh no! It just you see it still in the you still see it if you pace really fast in this one in the normal one before you get fibrillation you'll see alternance actually.
So I mean maybe if I can clarify because we get buildings here already. In the sodium there's an H gate and a J gate, right? And the J gate is slower. In here you can actually only use one gate. To have fast inactivation after depolarization, but the recovery from inactivation is set on the same time scale as the J gate, which is slower. So, you know, that's the way my interpretation of how this model works.
In this case, I mean, once you start getting pacing really fast, then you get it up into the alternates, and then you can get the conduction block, right? Before, if I pace a little slower, you get alternance, but everybody was the same height.
But what's confusing people is the H gate, because in the real ionic model, the H gate inactivates quickly and recovers quickly. And it's only the J gate that recovers slowly. And you're using one gate to both.
Yes, in one way we combine both.
Yeah,
combine
they combine, both, so they combine, that's combine, fine.
And
yeah.
the M gate is a function just of the voltage.
My question is, experimentally, how do you go from, but at the same rate, you have high APA, in one case, but
not
in the other, so somehow your time constant
has changed. Yeah, but this one has calcium. This normal heart with calcium, this is a heart
right,
with no calcium.
The APA phenomenon is a sodium effect.
Yes. So but again, it's covered with once you have calcium, right. Then also you prolong the action potential, and it's harder to get to the lower the eyes. We can work on the model. I'll show you. It is, but for example, Villeroy. It depends on how strong is the is the sodium or not the sodium versus the calcium. For example, the Lou Rudy, you can pace really fast and you get alternance in APD, but not amplitude. Biller-Royler is one that you can get very, very, you start seeing a lot of amplitude in the air because the sodium is not as strong.
So, one short comment. In fact, let's say all this is we're kind of confined in a zero-dimensional, one-dimensional world. But real heart is three-dimensional, and in three-dimensional heart, there are completely different mechanisms. They will show exactly very similar data that Flutter shows, but have completely different explanation. Actually, in 2015, we published a paper that actually analyzes this, but was completely different.
Yes, so this is what I'm going about. So there's another mechanism to get amplitude alternance and alternance in general. I call it the Gaskell alternance. Because it's one who found it 2-to-1, but it's when you have 2-to-1 block. That's what you're saying, right? So once you have 2-to-1 block, and so the first one actually was Arce, the one who first showed it. Then later on, you and Oliver Berners had a paper. We show it also experimentally. We show it in 2008 in horse atria. So this is a horse atria, and then at the same year also Godfrey also showed it with in rabbit ventricles. That when you're pacing, as you're pacing fast, if you get conduction block in one region, so one region because of dispersion, if you pay, depending on where you're pacing, you have this APD longer in one direction than there's the other. So from one pacing, you can get conduction at very fast cycle lengths. In the other one, there's a cycle length that will not hold it. So you can have, as you go from, so here's this is the stimulus that is somewhere around here, the simulator. You have the waves. So these are propagating all the waves, but you see start slowing down. There's a region that gets to block. There's 2-to-1 block. So not every wave propagates. Only one wave, the next wave gets blocked. So when you have that at the boundary here between beats, because this beat has to die out, the amplitude is going to decrease to zero, right? So that's what you see. So you in the region of 1-to-1, you see 1-to-1. And as you keep propagating up to this region, the 1-to-1 has to go to 2-to-2. So in between, you have amplitude alternance, which is what you're saying. But that's a different mechanism, and there are many mechanisms. I'm just talking one and trying to explain just one that is just dynamically. So in this case, you get amplitude and you get the conduction block. Now this is different than what we have in our case. We did experiments and we show when you have conduction block, you can have that. So here you're propagating here, you get 1-to-1, and the conduction block and it decreases the amplitude. But the experiments that we show, the propagation is through the whole heart. So the 1-to-1 and the amplitude, the short one, is all of them through the whole heart. There's no conduction block. So it's a different mechanism.
Well, in a deeper layer, you may have 2-to-1, and this is exactly what
it's
we showed.
I want to clarify what Arkady was actually, I think, talking about. That was my question as well. So I always see a lot of alternance in amplitude in optical market. Mm-hmm. But when I did patch clamp, it's very, very rare when you see alternance.
Single cell. Patch clamp is single cell.
That's why
you stimulate
it.
Yeah, there's
some
no comparison.
Some kind of artifact from deeper layers.
Yes, I agree. It can be happen. But I'm showing you with a model that is possible to get it without. So the model doesn't have the conduction block.
So did
the
you,
model reproduces.
Did you see this microelectrode?
I mean, as I say, right? I mean, we can get it like that, and it can happen on the.
It's happening.
It can happen too,
heart.
Right? I agree. But it's independent. I mean, but it's still two different mechanisms, and I can explain it with the model that is different mechanisms, right?
I just want to clarify what he was asking.
So, zebrafish shows significant amplitude ultrasound through microelectrode.
Yes, microelectrode is huge alternance in amplitude.
Microelectrode.
Huge. Yeah. And there's it's so tiny that it has to propagate. So there's I don't think there's conduction block. All right. So, second part of the talk is now we have one mechanism. I don't know if this will be applicable or not, but it's a mechanism that we can explain from some stuff in the lab. So now let's try to do another mechanism of how to try to defibrillate. So for defibrillation, we need a high electric shock. So basically, you have a heart. It's actually simulations with Jan Bragat we did. So this is a spiral wave. You put an electric shock. It has to be strong enough, and you can defibrillate. But it has to be strong enough to excite all the cells, basically. The trick is to excite all the cells. So it's been shown that in order to excite all the cells, if you have...
It's a vital main simulation.
Yeah, vital main.
So it penetrates, there was this issue of how the voltage penetrates the tissue. Vital main is enough to get the penetration?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
But I think you need some heterogeneity.
Oh, you have heterogeneities. Yeah, we have heterogeneities. Yeah, right. It's not, and this is the key. You have homogeneous. You only do the boundaries.
Okay.
So they have some heterogeneities inside.
I was asking.
Yes. So that's going two more slides. So you have to excite with a you have. I don't. Nobody exactly knows why it has to be 5 volts per cm emitter, but that's what kind of like what's been shown experimentally. So in order to get that, if you have an external shock, it has to be between 100 to 360 joules. That's 1,000 volts, 30 amps for a couple of milliseconds. The day I electrocute Hiroshi, it was 100 volts, but it was only 0.001 joule, and it was hurting, right? So sorry about that. But so you can imagine how much it is when you have actually amps and one order magnitude of volts. So it's very, very strong. And even if it's an internal is 7 joules, it's 350 volts, about 4 amps for a couple of milliseconds. So when you do that, actually, you also, it's not only painful, but you actually, this is a dog experiment where we defibrillate many times. You can see some of the burning due to the electrodes. The defibrillation shock.
Just one thing, so internal, I think this is underestimated. So when you implant the defibrillator, internal defibrillator, the default is about 35 to 40 joules. So
really?
7 joules is the very, very minimum of the middle. And then minimum, you can program any joules, but the minimum the people usually program is a 15 joule.
15? Wow. Well, I think once you have 7, 15, I don't know if you distinguish the pen. But yeah, it's still okay. It's important. Good, thanks. So actually, in collaboration with Stefan and Valentin Krisky in MPI, Robert in UPIE, and Elizabeth and Niels at RIT, over the last, now it's actually it's going to be 10 years. We're getting old. Since we got the first experiments with LEAP in 2009, yeah. So we got that. So we got a new method of defibrillation. So again, as Alan mentioned, you have to have heterogeneities. So we claim, I mean, we have to discuss with Akari later on, but we claim in our case is the vessels. This is a very big effect of heterogeneities. So this is a dog heart that I fill it up with a microfill. So you can, I put silicone everywhere to keep it static and a fill, and then fill the vessels with microfill. So you can see all the vessels very carefully. And then I sent it to micro CT at 25 micro resolutions. So we did 6 different dogs, ventricles and atria, and calculated all the vessel distributions inside. And then that was my job, and then poor Stefan and his students, then especially Philippe and Daniel, they had to come and calculate the distribution as function of size for all this data that I sent him. So they calculated, and it turns out that when we do electric shocks, we can correlate the time of activation very well with the number of distributions of the vessel distribution that we have as function of electric field. So what it means is that as you put an electric field, the stronger it is, the smaller heterogeneities you can light inside the tissue, and you can excite and terminate the arrhythmias. So if the electric field is very short, very small, then you can only excite. You can only excite the small the small vessels. And as you increase more, you can excite those are the large vessels, sorry. And as you start increasing the electric field, you can excite more of the smaller vessels and terminate inside. And of course, we'll have to talk later with Arcadia. There may be other effects that are heterogeneities that are bad. But anyway, regardless of that, so we did experiments in numerical simulations with Niels, then we did it in vitro, and then especially finally in vivo with Stefan. So this is experiments we did in Cornell. This is one dog. This is the right atria. This is the right ventricle. So it's in atrial fibrillation. We do one shock and it goes to normal. But you see the shock is strong enough. It's about 1.3 joules. It's enough that recruits all the nerves of the body, and then there's motion.
Is it's across?
No, it's actually here. You have the catheters inside. It's like in the clinic. So these catheters are about 2 centimeters, 3 centimeters. And they go inside, one is in the right, one is in the left atria. So you see here's one of the catheters here going into the inside of the right, the left, and this is the right. Here you can see a little bit the tip. If you can be careful, you can see the tip of the catheter. So the catheters are inside and the electric field goes across those catheters.
Why
are you doing atria, not ventricle? We
were doing atrial fibrillation.
This is atrial fibrillation.
This
is atrial fibrillation. Here, let me show you. You haven't seen it when it's open. So it was the atria was fibrillating. The ventricle was very regular, right? But is the atria the one fibrillating? Here, let me show you. So that signal is from the atria. This is an MAP from the atria. It goes to normal. Now we did the same thing with five stimulus using 10% of the energy of each of the shock one or the big one, and it terminates the arrhythmia too. Right? But it doesn't engage the nervous system. Right? So we claim that it should be less painful because of that. So anyway, so we published that in Nature and in Science, and we have very good results in ventricles and atria. Both for those cases, we can reduce the energy by 10%. But we wanted to study more the mechanisms under which it defibrillates. So with Claire, one of my students, then we work on all the data. We did a few more experiments, and then we did more data, and we try to understand what mechanism is happening when you do the five pulses. So we claim it's synchronization. So one way to study synchronization is to use Kuramoto plots. Kuramoto plots are plots in phase space. So it's just it's a space for the it's a circle, but the action potential is very fast, right? So the action potential. So we have the action potential is very fast for the upstroke, and then this is the back. So this shows dots around this phase space show position of the action potential in space for different ones. So this is a simulation. We initiate spiral waves, and then you can see at the beginning we have that this is the phase space, this is the phase, and this is the spiral waves. You see this population everywhere distributed through the whole tissue. When you start doing the shocks, little by little you start synchronizing. So here, in addition of color, we have a color for the blue is low percentage of pixels. As the more pixels are again having the same phase, then they start getting darker in color. So you can see with each pulse, you start getting more and more synchronization of the pulses until everybody synchronizes, and then it just terminates everything. So here you can see the different shocks, the leap. So you have the spiral waves here. We do the first shock. So here at the beginning, all the cells are already distributed everywhere. So you have a lot of points through the phase. As you start doing the shocks, you start getting a few more points together and close together and increase the color of the synchronization, and then until the last point there everybody gets excited almost at the same time and then just down. So so we did that also in experiments. So this is a right ventricle, a left ventricle. I just excited here, it's perfused from this side, so it's alive. Here you have the two electrode shocks. It's fibrillating. We do five shocks. This shock is 1.2 volts per centimeter, so it's not enough to defibrillate. It just comes back to fibrillation. This one we increase a little bit more, 1.4, and then we can actually terminate. You see, and with each pulse, you see this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You see, you start increasing more the tissue that you see until you terminate the arrhythmia. With this, the same analysis in many of these experiments. With the face.
So just explain what it is. Is that a ventricle?
Yeah, it's a section of a right ventricle.
Oh, right? Okay.
So it's a section. So we cut out this here. In this case, we cut out the atria. So the atria is not there anymore, and it's only a section of the left ventricle, and it's perfused.
And the field is from where to where?
The field is from here to here. It's perpendicular to the prep.
Are they plates or is
the plates.
Point electrode?
No, in this case there are plates. These are plates. We have a plate here and a plate here, and you shock. And so you have the red color means action potentials, and so this point here, there's a point somewhere here in white. I don't think this is a signal from a point somewhere here.
How did you find the location of the, how did you decide location of the registration electrode? Where did you get the signal from?
The signal is one point here. So this is everywhere, the voltage, and this is just one point, just to show the signal in one point.
Okay.
But overall, but you can see it here everywhere, right? You see the activity.
Yes, everywhere. It happened to be good enough location.
And so here's the analysis of the data. So it's the same data. Now analyze it, but now this is plotted with the Kuramoto phase space. And we can see that everybody around well distributed during fibrillation. Once you start doing the pulses, then we start getting closer and closer. And you start synchronizing more and more.
So
this is just a visualization way, but there's a better way to quantify synchronization.
Can you elaborate on the difference anti-tachycardia pacing versus delivering several lower energy pulses?
So ATP will be from one stimulus and will propagate from there and tries to push away the waves.
Electrode.
This one is like global. It's global ATP, basically. It will be global ATP.
So has this made it to the clinic? I mean, it sounds great. No. What's the problem?
Because companies, they don't care if they have it. It works for them. The defibrillation works. So they have other things they worry about, like the life of the electrodes inside, how they have to change them. Those are other things that if they lower the energy,
for the patient,
they don't care.
This could be
yes, but they don't care. Yeah, for the patient is good, but since when the companies are for the patients? It's still not completely shown. It shows it's very low, and also, I mean, this is all still clinical in setting in animals. So Stephanie is working. Stephanie.
It's trivial to make global electrodes in vivo. Right?
Huh?
It's not so trivial.
It's not so trivial.
Global yeah. fields in vivo.
But this is in the we did it in the experiment I showed you on the atria was with the as in the clinic, right? Was with the.
Ventricular mass
for ventricular, yeah, it's another thing, right?
So, Flavio, have you algorithmized what should be the voltage? Because for clinicians, it's very important to have a setup voltage that will bring success. And
the voltage was about 150 volts. It's just the current was the thing that it was different, right? So you have the different current. So the current was different and it was changing depending on the impedance of the impedance of the. Of the system.
Maybe I can comment on the potential translation, which is actually challenging. So it's very promising indeed, but it's also challenging. There are, for ventricular fibrillation, dependencies on the field geometry, which are essential and which might require a change in the electrode configuration, which again would make it more difficult to translate. But companies, I think, are getting interested in these ideas, both for atrial fibrillation as well as for ventricular fibrillation. We believe that ventricular fibrillation is the more relevant disease to be cured, and the case where the method would bring much more benefit to the patient. For atrial fibrillation, I think the challenge is that you really have to be painless. Even if there is a mild pain, so it wouldn't be acceptable and tolerable to patients. But so we're working on this together. So
is the pain threshold known?
It's about less than a joule. In principle, it's about how much, and also it depends on the. It's very complicated because it depends. People have more different levels, and also, for example, shocks. When you do shocks, if you do one shock that's strong and the next ones are lower. The person will still, even though they're lower, they'll feel it stronger. So there's all this. So it's a very complicated issue, the whole pain issue. But people think it's below one.
Patients usually are unconscious during ventricular fibrillation.
Yeah, that's why for ventricular fibrillation, it will not matter, but it will matter to make it faster, right? Because if you don't get it.
But it's not true. So the whole purpose of having defibrillator is to prevent you from losing consciousness. Because when you lose consciousness, bad things can happen. Because if it happens when you're driving a car, you're going to harm other people. So you're completely conscious when you fire.
And it's very painful.
Where does the pain come from? Is it because of the skeletal muscles?
The skeletal muscles, yeah. That's what happened to.
So if the configuration is such that it's sort of a wave possible?
Yeah, but the electric field always it produces lines, right? So there's no way to.
Have you done any measurements of the muscle contractions?
Sorry, I'll get back. Uh-huh.
I was just saying, I mean, with that pain in mind, has there been any measurements of the muscle contraction, the skeletal muscle contraction with this versus standard defibrillation?
You see, this experience by default, they're so complicated and it takes so long that, yeah. But yeah, we'll have to. So we have now a grant to continue studying, and now we're proceeding now to study how where to put the electrodes to optimize them, the shapes is possible, orientation, all these things. So we're doing now the numerics for that, and then we'll go to the experiments actually in the fall, I hope.
So did you try different locations for registration electrode? Would it be the same success?
Oh, yeah. So we have done it with electrodes in different positions.
No. Not the simulation, but he's actually seeing everything. He's just displaying one place. He's mapping everything. All these pixels, he knows what's happening.
I'm not talking about pixels. I'm talking about registration electrodes, where you get...
So registration electrodes are everywhere. It's optical mapping. But he displays one.
What's
not the same.
What's registration electrode?
Okay. Do you understand it right, that your signal, when to put the simulation, was based on location?
No.
Okay, so the face you show, what is the face? Is it summative?
This is just action potential as a function of time, like in a simulation.
Action potential at which point?
Everywhere. So this is color, right? It's color. No color is minus 85, color is 10 millivolts.
This face on the graph, when do...
There are several points on the graph.
For this one is all of them. All of them are displayed here.
Okay. Right? Yeah, then I understand the defibrillator components, because how will you implement all these electrodes in real...
No. This is not, no, that's the point. No, we don't have electrodes. The vessels are the electrodes, the virtual electrodes. The vessels, when you put a stimulus, the current goes intracellular and extracellular, so the vessels are the virtual electrodes. That's what you don't record.
Where the real electrode is?
Just outside.
Sorry.
Like I showed in
simulating.
The...
Simulating, okay.
Yeah, it's an electric field. It's a far field.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you applied the leap when there was no fibrillation, can you see the effect of the vessels?
Yes. In the lecture, we correlate that one too. So we did this very stupid experiments just with a cascade camera. It's very fast and it takes forever to download. So you very fast resolution. So you would really record the atria with the vessels and the camera. It takes 200 milliseconds of recording and then 3 hours to download the data from the camera. But yeah, we can see the activations where they're coming from the vessels. So in the Nature paper we have that. The surface first, but also so we did it for different electric fields. So the very first electric field, you only have a surface.
No, I said, but how do you image the inside of the ventricle?
Oh, this one was for the atria. We did it for the atria. Oh, it was very thin, so you can see.
Yeah.
So you can see. So with that one, we did it for the atria. Anyway, so here again, as in the simulation, you can see with everybody, it just gets synchronized more. They get all the points get close together until everybody gets excited and terminates. But there's a better way to try to. This is just the Kuramoto, the Kuramoto plots are just to show a little bit better face space to show. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The upstroke is so fast.
That's why we rerouted
a little bit just to. So this is upstroke and then downstroke, or the other way around. Upstroke like that and downstroke this way. So a better way to. So let me show you a simulation here. So this has the electrode. So here. This is the electrode, so you have a tissue with heterogeneity, so the heterogeneity will activate the vessel. So this is just a simulation here. And why doesn't play? Come on, play. That's the only video that doesn't play. So here, in principle, you have a spiral wave, and then you stimulate many times, and it synchronizes. So one thing you can calculate is the amount of tissue excited. So we call it fraction of tissue excited as function of time. So the defibrillation is going to be oscillating. And once you do the shocks, it starts growing and growing more and more as everybody gets excited, right? And it will defibrillate if everybody gets excited at some point. If you take the derivative of this function, it will tell you how synchronized they are, right? So at the same time, they start sending you. So the faster, the more synchronized they are, the derivative is going to be faster.
So from your heterogeneities are just tissue that is not excitable?
Different conductivities, yeah. Slowly different conductivities, yeah. And so when you do that, you get, and you can see a little increase in synchronization, right? And the key is to get excited, excite all of them, and with synchronization. So we do that, for example, this is a simulation of an atria. This is an atrial fibrillation. This is the atria here. It's fibrillating. This is the signal from this point here. There's one shock, and it terminates the arrhythmia. So this is a one shock. It's 4.6 volts per centimeter. So you see this is the fraction of tissue as fraction of time. You do the shock, everybody gets excited and terminates. But if you take the derivative, it's not, they're not synchronized. Right? They all get excited, but not at the same time. That's why the stimulus has to be strong enough, because some are relatively refractory, some are easy to excite. So then some will excite sooner, some will eventually later. Everybody gets excited, but not at the same time. So when you do it...
The combination of anti-tachycardia pacing and this?
In the case when we got very low energy, LEAP becomes ATP. Because you're only activating from the boundary. So at the low end of LEAP, it becomes ATP.
But you could imagine having also real electrode pacing and combining both. I'm just curious to see.
Keep putting stuff inside the heart.
Sure. Have you looked at the gradient of conductivities? So across blood vessels versus, let's say, the laminar sheets that separate the layering.
Yeah. So that also
numbers to know if those gradients are bigger than those gradients.
So Edwig Mond did a very nice study like that. So he get the fibers and he got them around the vessels, and then he put values for the conductivity and did these studies, and he showed that when you do the shocks you can get this activation as function of electric field.
Just asking experimentally what is known, when you jump from one sheet of myocytes to the next sheet, because they are very distinct laminar sheets, is that gradient of conductivity
enough to produce probably
bigger or smaller than the gradient across a blood vessel?
I don't know, but that could be one of the reasons why Arkady sees a little differences between our studies and his studies. So in his studies, he doesn't see the activations coming from the vessels.
Because he sees them from other places. It's the activating function. Yeah. It's either the gradient of conductivity or the second derivative of the field curvature.
There are also clefts, no, I mean, it's controversial, but there are also regions where there's space, right?
Right.
Yeah. So
that jump is actually quite substantial compared to the jump across small muscles.
Isn't it controversial? It's a sort of... I mean, there's fiber rotation, but in terms of that actually being a space...
I don't think it's controversial. It's really distinct layers.
There are cleavage planes between the sheets of fibers.
Mm-hmm. But, and then that's what
it was. The cleavage planes, yes.
Yeah. That's one of the things we said. This is normal hearts as the heart gets older, and so we say that LEAP actually gets better for people with arrhythmias and older, because now you have more heterogeneities, it's more scars, so those only can help.
That's
good news for you. The more messed up your heart is, the better it's for LEAP. So indeed. So we did the same thing now for the one shock. Now let's do it for the four shocks.
Oh, it's not gonna pay. There you go. Oh, here's the interval between these shocks.
The interval, so this is a sweet spot. So this is, we have to play the number of shocks and the interval between the shocks. The interval of the shock is comparable to the dominant frequency of the arrhythmia. So we have to first calculate for a few seconds the dominant frequency, and it turns out that, I didn't have time to put it in here, but we can underdrive or overdrive. So with LEAP, we can use, doesn't need to be exactly the period, dominant period, it can be a little bit above and a little bit below. And with both, you can synchronize with a little bit above or below. So the period has to be close to the dominant frequency that you find. The number of pulses will depend on the electric field. So there's a sweet spot. So we play many, five is kind of like a good sweet spot where it goes down the energy. The more you do, the lower you can go up to a number, right? If it's very little, then you can do thousands and nothing happens, right? And then at the other age, you end up with one shock with very strong electric field, right? So here's the, we didn't show it here. This movie should have shown just the fibrillation with four pulses. But when you do the fraction of tissue excited, it oscillates. Then you excite, you get more and more tissue. You take the derivative, you see that actually gets synchronized as function of of the solution. This is a case for failure. This is using 1.4 in the same setup we did 1.9. And then in case it almost synchronized, but it fails. And it started synchronized, but it didn't excite all of them. So that's what we claim. In our example is that when one shock, you excite all the cells, but it takes time for them to get excited. For our in LEAP, we the mechanism is through synchronization. We did, so for all these 26 trials, two ventricles and three atrias, we take, this is the peak of the fraction of tissue excited as function of beat number. So with each beat, you start synchronizing better and more. So you get more of them, all of them. And the energy, the maximum fraction of tissue excited between the one shock experiments and the LEAP, it shows a big different correlation. So there, we agree that it's due to synchronization and on like one shock stimulation. So in summary, so I present a mechanism for action potential amplitude alternance that could cause conduction block during fast pacing. I'm not claiming it's the only mechanism or a mechanism. It's just something that we can see in the lab and can be important. And then we show some of the mechanisms for synchronization as for the fibrillation with LEAP, and we're going to take it now to try to do more studies in PIGS as well and continue our recordings with Stefan. Ilya, Abusar, Alessio, Simonetta, Stefan, of course, Jan, my students, Connor, Diana, who did a lot for this work. We thank NSF, and this is my group, and thank you. All right.
Fantastic talk, and particularly the second half is experimental results, something that I was waiting for years. Now, the question is, according to the authors of LEAP, there is a certain mechanism that is behind this method, why it works. From what you have described and shown, your results are entirely phenomenologically consistent with a completely different explanation, which is the resonance drift. Can you see any way of actually distinguishing which of the two, or way of confirming that the mechanism that you have in your experiments indeed LEAP rather than resonance drift?
Well, I think in resonance drift, what you're saying is you push into the boundaries.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Define it.
So yeah, can you? So what will be then resonant drift? The other options?
Okay. Well, I've published close to a dozen papers on that topic, and I was explaining up to an hour how much energy do we have. Well, briefly, the resonant drift requires stimulating the medium more or less uniformly everywhere, as you do with the fibrillation, only do with much lower amplitude. Important thing, you deal synchronously with the rotation of those spiral waves, whatever you call them, rotors, what it is. And then their position will change regularly in time until such time that they are annihilated, either by collision with each other or by collision with the band. What you have shown us, that was mostly annihilation with each other. Mm-hmm. Doesn't change.
No, not with each other, with the beats activation from the virtual electrodes activating. There are these different. Here you're forcing everybody to get excited, so the band, the
vortex. That's exactly what will happen if you monitor what happens during the resonant drift simulations. If you were able to follow the tips of the wave breaks, bit by bit, you would see them move. Step by step.
Okay. Oh, here they will not move. They're little by little you annihilate, and then there's no more. Here little by little you annihilate each spiral wave. So it will be easier.
Annihilating with what?
Huh?
That's precisely what happens.
So you think that's contrary to topological track. If you have a spiral and you have an ectopic beat, that you don't get rid of the spiral.
Right. So you accelerate. Yeah.
I mean, it becomes semantics in this sense.
Close to guys.
Right. Yeah.
They come closer and closer. This guy comes close to the boundary and farthest on the boundary.
Every time you synchronize more, then you shift, and you can actually like send a tip of from
when
here. So
they're
really
closer
far away
to each other. Then the bigger part of the medium is getting synchronized at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible that you have all these vessels or aerogenities that send waves, target patterns that interact with spirals, and you do it several times. They move in very complicated ways, and ultimately, yeah, they annihilate. I mean, there's still conservation of topological charge away from boundaries.
Of course.
So I think it's happening. This resonant dream, but it's, you know.
No, do you remember the explanation of the mechanism of leak? The original idea behind it, which also tells you that you must be somewhat away from the resonant frequency. Not at the frequency of the spirals, but either below or above.
It can be, I mean, numerically we can do at, below, or above.
Precisely.
Right.
That's the phenomenology of resonance. The phenomenology of leak is that you have to be away from it in order to hit the excitable gap.
No.
Yes. Well, just read where this leap comes from. Excitable gap. When you need to feed excitable, that's what you need five pulses.
And that's pacing.
Yes?
Isn't that pacing
though? No. That's leap.
It's ATP pacing.
No. ATP pacing from one place.
Yes.
It's by electric field, far field simulation. Mm-hmm. You need to feed excitable gap. In order to feed that gap, to unpin. Pinned vortices, you have to have
pinned.
The period.
They're not pinned, the spirals are not pinned.
Well, I'm telling you, the story behind leap, you're calling this method leap,
No, but the story.
Is there any evidence of, in your experiments, I see that there is no evidence in simulation, but in experiments, that it is indeed mechanism of leap rather than resonant drift. In leap, you need to have away from the resonant frequency. And what happens there? You unpin the vortex, and therefore, since it is unpinned, it can move and annihilate. So after unpinning, it should have a few more rotations, and then...
This is Krinsky's original idea was with unpinning. That was his whole idea, and then when we took it to the lab and I started studying it, and then we come out, it was synchronization from the beginning, but here just proved more in detail. But it was different. So Krinsky had one idea and he was pinning.
Yeah.
But that was him. No. And it was not, and uh-huh. he called it differently. And when we call it leap doesn't have to do anything with pin or unpin spiral waves.
Okay.
Some of the work with Krinsky and some of the work with Stefan, they have talked about spiral waves that are pinned and then they pin them out. All my work, it has been always pinned. Doesn't need to be spin.
Right.
They are completely, it works for, if they are pinned, fine, but if they are not pinned, they don't need to be pinned.
It was resonant from the very beginning, only called by different names.
Right.
Was feedback controlled resonant?
No, it wasn't. That was my next question. Did you ever try to or think of using the feedback control?
Yes, with Ilya and with my postdoc, we've been doing that, but it's a different method, not through leap, through different feedback control with information in phase, but not through here.
Yes, that's what I see. I think that there are already ideological problems, because what do you actually call algorithm or mechanism or whatever, you might call it, you might call mechanism phenomenological description of what's going on if you apply some algorithm. You can call a mechanism the algorithm you apply. And this way, so Vadim is talking about mechanism as the algorithm you apply to get rid of. From what you say, and Alan confirms, you call mechanism an explanation, a logical explanation of what you see when you apply an algorithm. And these ideological problems,
these ones we can talk over.
Not interested in ideological problems so much, but
Leon, we had a question.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to change the topic just slightly. In this meeting, several people have mentioned the term anti-tachycardia pacing. And that actually, in my opinion, is one of the open problems in cardiac arrhythmias. Anti-tachycardia pacing, according to my knowledge, and we'll correct that if it's not right, is a sequence of, let's say, up to 7 or 8 pulses given from a lead in an implanted device meant to try to terminate tachycardia. Generally a monomorphic ventricular tachycardia. It's, as far as I can tell, something in which the pacing frequency and number and the timing between the pulses is very empirically determined by the operator. I think there are algorithms, but I don't think that they've been studied very well by this community or how it works.
I tried a few times in the lab. I tried a few times, many times in the lab, and I haven't ever been able to pass the other ways to in order to push a wave away.
So right, in the sense that the anti-PKR pacing is from the defibrillator or pacemaker is designed to determine the anatomical reentry, not the functional reentry.
Right.
Because then you can kind of click the algorithm quickly calculate the, what's the average cycle length. And based on the cycle lengths, it's going to say automatically calculate the 80% of cycle lengths and give a burst of typically between 8 and 10 of all round of rapid pacing. The idea is to just hit the excitable gap, right. So that you can actually make it.
But in principle, it doesn't need to be an anatomical reentry. If it's functional, it's just one.
However,
it one
work.
It should, but it does. Yeah.
It does. Well, not that the care pays if it works great, but it doesn't always work. Sometimes it doesn't even work for anatomical reentry.
Right.
But we do it anyway because it works, and you can avoid this painful painful component of the particular shot.
It was my understanding that the basic theory, which is not very well studied or articulated to my reading of the literature, is that if it actually, you're pacing a little bit faster than the intrinsic cycle length, if you actually manage to hit the refractory time at the correct stimulus, then you can basically stop the tachycardia. You also have the possibility of restarting it again.
Stefan has a couple of nice papers like that when you have an anatomical reentry one, and then using leap to excite from the heterogeneity to try to kill it, right? So doing ATP through far field.
But to this community, that's a problem that I think would benefit possibly from theoretical analysis.
Can I ask a question, Hiroshi? Would it be a good point to compare energy which is required in experiment to get rid of anatomical reentry? Would it be the point that the energy which, okay, we know that you can get rid of functional reentry by low energy, it's clear, okay? Resonant, above resonant, below resonant, pacing, whatever pacing. Yeah, it's possible in some settings to get rid of functional reentry. But could it be a good question how much energy is actually required to get rid of anatomical reentry?
It's going to be lower. And it's been studied. Why
do you mean
because lower? Because the tissue that you want to make a refractory is much smaller in anatomical reentry. You don't have to change the whole field. And for example, empirically, for some kind of the anatomical reentry, supraventricular tachycardia versus atrial fibrillation, how much energy do you need to break the fibrillation?
Yeah.
Atrial fibrillation, typically 200 joules externally. And SVT, typically even around 50 joules or lower. So empirically, we know that it's going to be much lower in anatomical reentry.
Which is a good sign.
Anyway, I think we can. Oh, well, you have a question? Or?
No, I was just wondering if doing this method, maybe Jean Braga with his stimulation with heterogeneities could track what happens to the filaments.
Yeah, so we're doing.
And you can look at the parametal cost, but you could be looking at how the annihilation process taking place and the number of rotors that are left.
We're doing that now with WebGL in 3D. With the data that we have from the structures,
yeah.
We're following the full vertex filaments and trying to understand how they really push away.
That would sort of speak to the.
Because everything we have here is surface data, right?
Surface data, but ultimately,
so, yeah.
I think that would sort of. There may be version of that algorithm that promote the annihilation in some way.
And there's also Niels. Niels, he's going to talk about this other method to try to. Just do by the surface activation, the defrigilate.
And then another
by modifying the vortex filament.
Your first slide with the nitrogen, liquid nitrogen freezing of a part of the aerosol. Have you looked at how big the size needs to be before you switch from VF to a anatomical VT? Or that was just.
No, that was just the one, but it will be a. Yeah, that's something to do at the end. At the end of the experiments, we can always do things.
For
Vessel,
anatomical VT.
Yeah, that's true. Because this one, once we did it, it could fibrillate very easy and with a lot of waves. And once we did that, when you have just the reentry, so that does.
Because people always say there is functional reentry, and the people who make it to the hospital actually will have this slower VT. But you could create in part with this liquid nitrogen size a function of size. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. One short comment also. So here we have two questions, by the way. One is what the field does to tissue and how does it excite tissue, and we don't have clarity here yet. And I think it would be good to get to a common denominator here. What really happens when you apply field?
Activating function.
Everyone is talking about activation function, but we are kind of have a different take on what that function is, and we have, let's say, aphaptic, non-aphaptic, we get completely different field distribution. And would be useful sometime, let's say, right?
The sawtooth versus...
It's always sawtooth. The question is what makes this sawtooth and what actually, what this heterogeneity causes this field heterogeneity. We'll agree that it's some kind of field heterogeneity, the question what it is. So this is one question that's not resolved yet. And the other question is, if you kind of excite, if you know what we excite, and how we kind of stop arrhythmias, and it's a completely different question. And so I wanted to say that there are two questions, and maybe it would be easier if we just resolve one and then move to another, because then we can do one step at a time rather than trying to solve the entire problem, but sometimes it's difficult. That's all.
No, we can.
Okay. Let's meet again at 4:45.
45.